session number 10490, Reel 2.
Jenkins, Reel 2. So can you tell me what happened to you on Havoc in the Mediterranean? What do you remember of that?
Well, we had to start off with convoy duties and taking them from Gibraltar through to Malta, and then from Malta to Alexandria, further up, that's about 1,000 mile hops roughly, and of course the Mediterranean then was more or less governed by the Axis then, the Germans then, because the German army was practically in control of all the Mediterranean then. I mean, they had Sicily, and they had quite a lot of places, and all the places in North Africa, they had Rommel, nearly up to Alexandria actually, you know. And when we was based in Alex, we used to do what they call suicide raids. They used to top us up with all ammunition for the 8th Army, and we used to have to go out and try and beat the moon rising, otherwise we get spotted because we used to go flat out. They used to leave a horrible white wake behind, you know. You're doing about 30, 35 knots. I mean, you're moving. And so we had to rush there and get into Tobruk and unload all the stuff if we can, you know, all the various ports, and get out as quick as we could before Jerry could let the aircraft know and come over and bomb us, like, you know, because you could never see the aircraft, but all you heard was them bombs whistling down. They could see you, but we could never see them in the dark. You couldn't have no lights on, yeah. And we done that several times, you know, well, quite a lot of times really.
Did you get hit by the bombing?
No, near misses. And
were you by yourself or with other ships?
Oh, with other ships as well, you know, other destroyers as well, you know.
And you had ammunition on board, did you?
Yeah, we unloaded that. We used to hide behind cases of landmines when we heard the bombs dropping, when they actually saw us sometimes before we entered. So we managed to get in and unload and all that, you know. One ship used to stop outside and keep the mappy up there. Then they used to go in while we come out and kept them happy, kept the guns and the bombs from falling into the harbour more than anything, you know.
What else did you carry apart from ammunition?
Troops, Gurkhas, we used to feel sorry for them because they used to be seasick, and on land they were tops, you know. But on a boat, I'm afraid they were legless, you know. We felt sorry for them, really. We had a lot of mess to clear up afterwards, but still, we didn't bother with our hoses, and that was finished. Yeah.
And did you take anything else in besides troops and ammunition?
Well, it was food, like, you know, like the tinned corned beef and all that stuff, or dried fruit and all that, you know, tinned fruit and all that kind of stuff, which they can eat there and then on the spot, the troops, you know. Can always open up a tin of peaches or something, couldn't they, and eat.
Who unloaded the ships once they got to Tobruk?
Oh, you had the army. Oh yeah, they were there, and they got it all quick too. Oh yeah, the army done it themselves. They knew who was coming or was supposed to be coming, and sometimes we went and we had to come back because it was too dangerous, you know. It had changed hands. Jerry was there. As you know, Tobruk changed hands about 3 or 4 times.
Did you see any other ships hit on the supply runs into Tobruk?
I can't recall whether I see any actual ships hit. We were so busy with ourselves getting out, you know, really. So the only time you knew that a certain ship was hit was if you, if she wasn't in company with you coming back, or if you'd heard it on the when you got back to Alex that such and such a ship was hit.
Was there any danger from submarines on the
supply? Oh yeah, you had the sometimes you had the Jerry and the Italian submarines still in the Med, you know. So we had our ASDIC going. That's the anti-submarine detection equipment stuff.
So destroyers were used to supply Tobruk?
Yeah, because they were fast and easy manoeuvrable to get in and out and that.
But obviously they wouldn't be able to carry very much, would
No. Although merchant ships did go in, obvious, you know, because there were some sunk in the harbour. We could see some of them sunk there, you know, just their funnels and masts showing.
What other memories have you got of the work that you did in the Mediterranean?
Well, we used to do bombarding. We used to bombard different coasts and ports up and down the coast. We bombarded one particular one, which was Bardia. And that was in a mountain range, like, you know. And they used to have a certain gun there. They used to, like that, something based on that, the guns of Navarone, where it was hidden by overhanging cliff. Well, this was a big gun, well, they called it in the end Bardia Bill. And it used to run out on lines. And they used to pump out some stuff there because we could, you know, it used to stop us from getting right within range. I mean, their range was further than us, so that we had to get in a bit, you know, nearer if we could, and that. And then we try to hit, then we could never hit this thing without often one or whatever happened to it in the end. Bardia Bill, they called it.
And it was firing back at the ships?
Firing back at the ships, yeah.
With any success against the ships?
Well, most probably some ships had been sunk on that stretch, because we, you know, you don't, it's surprising really, I mean, because that Mediterranean at the bottom there must be smothered in destroyers, because we lost practically three parts of our destroyers out there, really. All the cream went out there, really, 40 onwards. Afterwards, I mean, they started bringing in the old V's and W's, mostly what they had left. And and the Barham, we saw the Barham go up.
Can you describe that?
Well, we was all coming in on convoy, actually, coming in into Alex Harbour. And used to be a Captain D a destroyer right in the front. Used to be like an arrowhead, so they covered each piece, so all that was covered, and all that was covered. But how this one ever got in, I don't know. It must have got, they must have went right over the top of it. Must have been on the bottom, dead, you know, kind of thing. Engine shut off and everything. Anyway, it went right over the top. And as the battle fleet and cruisers went forward, so the Barham caught about three tin fish.
Did you see the torpedoes hit the Barham?
No, never seen us hit. We saw what was left of the Barham. Well, we see actually the explosion, you know.
What did it
look like? I was on the guns then, you know. I promoted myself in the early days of magazines. I mean, I was captain of the gun, or number two, eventually, when I was out there, you know.
What did the sinking of the Barham look like?
Well, it's terrific, really. I mean, you saw a whole turret, which must go about 1,500 tonnes or more, just lift up and come down and plonk in the water. And, oh, it was gone in a matter of minutes. And they lost quite a few men on board. I don't know how many men. I did record it somewhere in my notes. And they lost quite a few men. But
did you pick anybody up?
No, we never picked up because we was otherwise it break the screen, see, being destroyed. Most probably the other ships picked it up, which we had destroyers in inside the outer ones as well, you know.
How far from Shaw was the Barham hit then?
Well, not all that far, really. Because you could more or less see the coastline practically all the way up. You know, all the North African coast, all the way up, right to Alex, practically. Yeah.
How fast did the Barham sink?
Boy, that's probably just a matter of minutes, really. Could it broke up? It all hit the magazines, and could it just broke up and went? Just one big. Actually, they have shown it on the television of the Barham going up on them War at Sea programs. You know, I like watching all them documentaries. You know.
How did the Havoc get sunk? Can you describe it from what you remember?
Well, we left Malta with survivors of various ships because we was on the way home, as we thought. Then we had all our, what we term as rabbits, that's all our presents, what we accumulated in the time we was out there, you know. I was out there 2 years. Well, it must have been 2 years, or nearly 2 years. And then we had RAF personnel on board. They were pilots. They were going home for rest because they were classed as bomb happy. I mean, they were doing about 20 odd sorties a day in Malta going up. A lot of people don't realise that here. It's only a small place, but they were going up about 20 odd times a day. And they were tackling proper bomb happy. You tapped them on the shoulder, they go like this.
They'd flinch.
Yeah, would they? And we've taken them home, and then we was we was flat out all the time, and you had this kind of a low fog, you know, sea mist. You could see above, but if you was on a mast, they'd look out. You'd see over the top, really. That's how the sea mist. And we happened to be we'd see we was coming down towards Punta de la Rea, and you turn to starboard there, and you've got the Tunisian coast on your left, and all around the coast you had kind of lighthouses, beacons around the coast what I can make out is that this particular one wasn't lit or was out. Of course, we more or less like thinking of going on to the next one, and all the time we was heading inshore, flat out. Next thing we knew, we'd run aground at about 35 knots, which we more or less tore the bottom of the ship off. And all we had was only one person, I think, died on the ship through that. That was a leading stoker. He was on the main throttle down below, you know, and the main steam valve burst in front of him. Of course, he all went to jelly, so we've got him up top somehow or other and strapped him to tied him to the kedge anchor. We always have a kedge anchor on board on the deck for if we got a ground. They lowered a boat with it on, dropped it, and you pull the ship was pulled off with that, what they call a kedge. So we tied him to this and we dropped it over the side. That's the only way you could, you couldn't bury him any other way, really.
So he was being killed instantly?
Yeah.
What did it sound like when you ran aground?
Well, a lot of bumping and rattling like this, and then you heard all the steam coming out of the funnel. From the sirens and that, you know, because they're just more or less, I mean, nothing to stop it coming out then. I mean, the main steam valve had gone, and all you heard was sitting of steam. And
did you realise what had happened?
Well, not at the moment. We thought we did something. I know we hit the shore, but I mean, a ship or something, you know. It quivered, you know. And anyway, we all, there was a lot of the stokers burnt as well, which we managed to get all. And this was on the bank holiday Monday, on the 6th of April, this was.
Which year was
early
this?
Morning, 1942. And, as I say, they lowered the boats, although the boats weren't needed, although it was up to our chins, the water, see? I mean, we still carried a draft, you know, of about 30-odd foot. And we still had the boats to take bits and pieces ashore, you know, and the wounded, if any of them wounded. You know, there were wounded people on board as well from the actions ashore that we were taking home, you know, that was, had to go into hospitals properly, you know, for medical treatment. And we managed to get ashore. And in the meantime, there was one of these here Italian planes, a Savoy, I think they call them, a Savoy, came over, and the captain, which was Watkins at the time, Commander Watkins, they all shouted, "Lay flat," because they thought he was going to machine gun us, but it never. And next thing we knew, we was all herded together, and all went into Tunis, was the nearest place.
Who herded you together?
That's the they were the Vichy French. The opposite of the others.
How did they behave?
Well, not too bad really, considering. But it's an experience, like, you know, being hounded. And that, you know, we went into Tunis, and it took us, they put us on a train, and we was, I think it was about 3 days and four nights on that train, going through the Atlas Mountains to where was it, to Algiers. And then from there they bussed us into the camp, which is about 300 miles inland from there, what they call Lagua, which was years ago, or what still was then for that matter, a French Foreign Legion outpost.
How did civilians react to you in Algiers?
Well, we got on well with them, you know, somehow. Like, you always got them that didn't like all this opposition going on, you know. They gave us cigarettes and all that.
Was it the Arabs or the French?
The French. Because we was all huddled together. We hardly saw a lot. You know, we was all in one bunch. We hardly saw much what was happening, really, you know. Just told to get on this train when we got to Tunis. We had coaches to there, or buses with charcoal fires at the back or something like they had in them days. And in the end, we ended up in this here camp.
What were conditions like in the camp?
Well, I didn't go much on it, really. I mean, you had this three or four strands of barbed wire, and the food, which we weren't used to. I'm sure it was camel meat, but it was tough. Actually, we relied on the Red Cross parcels, which we got eventually, like one a month. And we had all Canadian stuff. It was all Canadian Red Cross we had mostly. And we had all the stuff in there, and then we had I wish I'd have taken up language classes, really, because they done classes, you know, the officers and that. And then we had the army. They were already, it's already a prison camp because they already had the army in there and other personnel as well. Merchant seamen as well, already in that camp, and then we come in.
Were there hundreds of people in the camp?
Yes, there was over 1,000 actually in the camp eventually, because we built a tunnel, and we all had all like them escape films you see when they go around shaking it all out from their feet, and that it all brought back memories really, because that's all what we done really in a cruder way, you know.
Where did you dig the tunnel?
Actually it started from one of these here coal fire, the old type of round fireplace, tall with a tall chimney thing, you know, they had in this officer's hut. And actually he was an engineer, and what they'd done, they'd unshipped this fireplace and made the tunnel entrance underneath, because he was a mining engineer in the army, and that's where they started the tunnel from there, right underneath the sand. And we had to collect all bits of wire from various places, you know, and well, it was crude really the way they'd done it, but they'd done it. Lighting underneath, you know, just overhead, bulb down again, and we done it in shifts.
Did anybody actually escape?
No, I don't think they did, because there was a big escape going on, and we'd heard about there going to be one. And then next thing we knew was they were being brought back. Eventually, all in bits and drabs, you know. But one lot got near the right near the coast, opposite Jib, really. And they were given away by a dog barking. And of course, the first thing you say was, "Get out of it!" Like, you know, it was clobbered. And next thing we knew, they had come back and spoke English, and most probably they knew they had to wire out the prisoners was. Might have been heading that way, you know. And all through saying that.
So how were you liberated from this camp?
By the North African landings itself.
Was it the Americans or the
Americans? I think it was the Americans that done the actual landing, probably, didn't they?
But who is both the Americans and the British?
British together, yeah.
The British First Army.
Yeah.
Was it the British First Army or the Americans who liberated you?
Well, actually, I don't know, really. All we knew that we know the camp was freed, and we was running around and like flies we were, burning our bunks because they were bug-ridden. I was bitten horribly all during them 7 months by bugs. Big red things used to be in the wood in the tea joints, you know, and in the end you got immune to being bitten. I think you had so much stuff pumped in you, or drawn out of you, one or two, and we dragged all these out and made one big whacking bonfire. In the end, mattresses, it was palliasses, that's right. Filled in straw, you know, straw, and they'd done that twice a week. We had them filled, because in the end, laying on them and all that, they all went to chaff, you know, all dust. So we had to get rid of that and then put some more straw in. That was like then.
So once you were liberated, which ship did you join then?
Gave coaches down to Algiers, and we was put on ships that was due back to the UK again, you know, another convoy going back. And I was on a ship called the Keren. I think it was a MV Keren or MS Keren, motor ship or motor vessel, I don't know, it's just Keren. And we was on that ship, and some of us were on other ships that was going back. But I think all our ship's company, what was there, was on this particular ship. And oh, we had a few excitements on the way. They'd had sightings of U-boats and all that, and we was down about three or four decks, which didn't suit us. I mean, you're not that low on a destroyer, not three or four decks. And of course, it was a horrible feeling, really, having to be trapped down there, you know. So we often wonder what it was like, you know. Must have been horrible for the merchant ship people, you know, sailors. Anyway, we eventually got back into the Clyde. I think it was the Clyde. We steamed up in the Clyde. And we'd made welcome there. And had something to eat. Then we had a train all laid on for us, because all this was all going through on the old wireless, you know, the phone. They were expecting, and anyway, then you got on a train and come south, and we ended up in London. The others went on to their home ports. We ended in London, and then got another train down to Chatham Barracks, my own barracks, my home port, you know. And we had a load of stuff on our side, or a load of French cigarettes, which had passed all the customs. That's what we didn't like. We passed through all the customs and that, which they waved us on because they knew we were. But when we got into Chatham Barracks, they said, "What do you got there with this, that and the other?" And I said, "Let's have a look." And they looked, and we opened up our, because we had two or three of these Red Cross parcel boxes, which we kept to put our personal gear in, like, you know, to bring back. And because a lot of us had a load of cigarettes in there, but they took the lot. I mean, couldn't say a dicky bird, you know, about it. Something shouldn't have been done. They've already been declared. But who's to argue with them on the gate? I call them white gaiters, sailors, them regulating petty officers and leading seamen, you know.
So what duties did you go on till then? Was it then that you went on to Russian convoys?
Well, after I got a medical exam, and we all got examined, and I had to go to the pay office, and we got paid, because all our wages were stopped during them 7 months. So we picked up a few bob, like, you know, with wages then. I mean, my wages then was only, what was it, £3.10 a fortnight. I mean, that didn't accumulate to as much as like it would do nowadays. And, of course, I went home then until, well, I say, leave was up till on the 14th of January, which